First, this Saturday morning to China, where some restrictions have been loosened and government officials are signalling a shift away from the strict zero COVID policy. This is coming after the largest protest in the country since the one seen in Tiananmen Square in 1989. In the last few hours, there are also reports that censorship is being ramped up to the highest emergency response level, with authorities cracking down on VPNs and tracking and questioning protesters. China's leader Xi Jinping has been firmly committed to eliminating coronavirus infections. Over 300 million people are currently in lockdown amid mandatory quarantine and mass testing. But the frustration at the human toll of these restrictions has boiled over in demonstrations in at least 18 cities around the country. So will the government back down be enough to quell the unrest? Or does this protest movement signal a serious challenge to the world's most powerful authoritarian government? Beijing-based New York Times correspondent Vivian Wang has been to some of the protests. She's part of a team that won a Pulitzer Prize last year for coverage of the pandemic. I asked her last night whether some of the easing of restrictions was expected.
I think it's fair to say that many people have been quite surprised by the announcements of easing that have come out in the past few days. So we've seen Chengdu, a big city in the south, announce that people no longer need to show their most recent COVID tests when they enter public spaces. They just need to show that they are generally healthy, basically. We've seen Guangzhou, which has seen a pretty grueling lockdown for over a month now, lifting a lot of those lockdowns. And people, I would say, are quite surprised because for a long time, the government had been beating the drum of, we are sticking to this path is correct.
So does this softening then in some areas amount to a back down?
It's hard to tell. You know, you can definitely say that this easing seems to be a response to the protests that we've seen across over the past week and even over months. But at the same time, in announcing this easing, the government has not acknowledged the protests at all. It has not said that these changes are because of the protests. It had instead said that this is, you know, routine adjustments of the policies that they've been doing throughout the entire pandemic. So I think they're trying to thread the needle of trying to dilute public anger without actually suggesting to anybody that protesting is the way to get what you want.
So what sparked these protests in the first place, and how much of a catalyst was the World Cup?
So the immediate impetus for these protests was that last Thursday, a fire broke out in the city of Urumqi in western China, and at least 10 people died. And many people believe that these deaths happened because of COVID restrictions, because residents could not get out of their burning apartment building because they were locked in, and firefighters couldn't get to the building in time because of various barriers that had been put up. But as you point out, there are a lot of other reasons that anger has been festering in China. So there's the World Cup, where people in China have seen scenes of people around the world gathering without masks, living this, you know, amazing post-COVID life that is very unimaginable here in China. And there's also just the fact that these restrictions and these lockdowns have been going on for years at this point, and people are really, really tired. So it was a lot of factors building up, and I think the fire in Urumqi was the sort of straw that broke the camel's back.
What is it like living under these extremely strict COVID restrictions after so long?
It's quite invasive. So especially in big cities where the surveillance and the technology are the most developed. When I walk around Beijing, for example, where I live, anytime I want to enter a public space, I have to scan a QR code to basically log that I've entered this place. I have to show proof that I've taken a COVID test in the past 48 hours. And anytime that you go to, say, a mall or a restaurant where it's later discovered that an infected person had also gone, you will get a call from local officials saying, we tracked your location and we would like you to quarantine for a certain amount of time. So all the time you're aware that your whereabouts are being tracked and logged.
And for some people, this has been going on and on and on. And I mean, some of the videos that have been emerging from China have been extraordinary. People, it's almost like zombie movies, people trying to flee before they're locked down, people being locked inside Disneyland in Shanghai.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It does call to mind zombie movies because the minute people hear a lockdown is coming, of course they want to get out as quickly as possible. Because if you don't get out, there have been these stories where people get locked down for days or even weeks at a time. People in lockdown have reported having trouble getting food and basic, daily needs because either deliveries can't get to them or just it's so haphazard. So lockdown is just everyone's nightmare. Not to mention, of course, if you're locked down, it's very hard for you to work.
And so we've heard a lot over the years about the internet firewall in China. The censorship in this circumstance hasn't been able to keep a lid on it. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a problem of sheer volume. Because normally the Chinese censorship apparatus is extremely sophisticated. They have all of these algorithms as well as human workers working to erase images, text that the government doesn't want to see. But because these protests and also just more general dissatisfaction with zero COVID, even if it's not in the form of a protest, is so widespread, it's across the country because zero COVID touches everybody. There is just this tsunami of content that the censors are having to work overtime to try to erase. And so inevitably, things do slip through the cracks.
So tell me about the protests themselves. You've been at some of them. What has it been like to see the crowd of people? What kind of numbers of people have been gathering?
I attended a protest on Sunday evening in Beijing, and the word that always comes to mind for me in thinking about what I saw and the footage that I've seen of what happened in other cities is surreal. I mean, I never imagined, I think many people never imagined that there would be such a mass mobilization offline in China in this era when the government under Xi Jinping has tightened surveillance and suppression so much. And so the protest that I was at in Beijing, it started, I would say, just a few dozen people, but by around midnight, about several hours after it started, there were certainly hundreds, if not, 1,000 or so people in the street. And they were mostly young people in their 20s and 30s, a mix of men and women. And, they were calling for things that, again, would have seemed unimaginable just a few days ago in terms of calling for democracy, freedom of speech, elections. It was really stunning.
Interesting, the ages that you're talking about there, younger people. What is the significance of that? Because, of course, for many people, we think back to 1989 Tiananmen Square and the protests that went on there. But this is a new generation of people who didn't live through that.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because I think for a long time, this generation of younger Chinese has been seen as, if not apolitical, even extremely patriotic, nationalistic, supportive of the Chinese government because they have grown up in a China that has been ascendant. They haven't known what China was like when it was sort of poor before the 1980s, for example. So they're very, very proud of being Chinese. And I think the fact that it's this demographic that you see leading the charge on these protests really speaks to how much zero COVID has upended their expectations of prosperity and of comfort in China, and how much it has encroached upon the pride that they had in being Chinese.
Because what is the situation around employment and the sort of expectation that young adults have in China for prosperity?
So the employment situation for young adults is quite bleak. The unemployment rate for young Chinese, which is about under 25, actually hit a record 20% this year, which is a staggering number. And college graduates are having trouble finding jobs. Before COVID in the boom years, everyone wanted to go work at a fancy tech company. Everybody kind of had this idea that they could make a lot of money, live in a big city. And now people are finding that those tech companies are doing layoffs. The jobs they thought would be waiting for them aren't there. And so, understandably, there's a lot of frustration.
And so this is spilling over onto the streets, but also on social media. How are people able to protest, to have their voices heard on social media when there is, of course, this level of censorship around that?
It's definitely difficult. I think that Chinese people, both during these protests and before them, have grown very good at sort of coded humor, sarcasm, different ways of trying to avoid the censors while still making clear that they are unhappy and that they are offering a form of criticism. So, one just very clear example of this that we saw this week was that Jiang Zemin, a former leader of China, died. And you saw all these people commenting on social media, sort of drawing implicit comparisons between Jiang and Xi Jinping, because Jiang was seen as being relatively more liberal, or at least presiding over a more liberal time in China. And so people were looking for ways to, offer praise of this former leader that seemed totally innocuous, but for, savvy readers, they would know that this was actually a form of online protest.
People have been using sarcasm as well, and also white paper. What's that about?
Yes, so in the offline protests that we've seen, people have held up blank pieces of paper. And this is, again, a nod to the extreme censorship in China, because people know that anything critical they say can get scrubbed or can get them in legal trouble. But if you hold up a white piece of paper, that's plausible deniability. You're not saying anything that theoretically you should be able to be prosecuted for. But everybody kind of knows that this is a sign of protest, so there's almost no need to say anything.
So where is this likely to go from here? Now that there is some rolling back of restrictions, what do you expect to happen? Is that likely to increase?
It's really impossible to say. I think that the government is likely hoping that the rolling back of some restrictions will help to ease public anger, take some of the momentum out of these protests. At the same time, they're also using the stick method of the carrot and stick, and we have heard many reports of people who participated in the protests getting calls or even door knocks from the police asking them about what they were doing there. So I think, the full force of the Chinese government is certainly starting to mobilize to make sure that this does not get out of hand. At the same time, this public anger, this outswelling of public anger really was remarkable. And we have heard people say that they're so encouraged to see people being brave enough to stand out. And so we really have no idea, on both the Chinese government side and the side of the Chinese people, what their next moves are going to be.
Yeah, you mentioned that it's sort of carrot and stick. Are there also signs of perhaps further tightening around some of the availability or some of the posts that people are putting up on social media, and that tightening up to perhaps begin to squash or quell these protests?
Definitely. So there have been reports of police in various cities, such as Shanghai, stopping people on the street actually and checking their phones to see if they have apps like Telegram or WhatsApp or other messaging apps that are technically not allowed in China. If they're found to have those apps, that could get them in trouble. There have been worries within the existing group chats that police have already infiltrated them. And so it's becoming a lot harder for people to organize the kinds of demonstrations that we saw last weekend.
You mentioned also the scanning of QR codes that is so prevalent around whether people are able to move around and where people can go. Is that something else that you're seeing begin to tighten up and begin to have further restrictions placed on individuals?
That's a little bit harder to say because the QR codes that you have to scan are so tied to the COVID restrictions. And as part of the easing that various local governments have announced recently, it's actually possible that we'll see the opposite and that they'll start saying that you don't have to scan as much, or even if you scan, we won't check for example, what your latest COVID test result is. But at the same time, these are ways for the government to track where you are, where you've been, and that is an ability that the government is likely to not want to give up. And so it'll be an interesting balance over the coming months, years, to see how the government tries to ease up on COVID restrictions while maintaining a certain level of control.
How much is the zero COVID strategy very much the plan for the government?
Well, that's hard to say. I think what we can say is that the tools that zero COVID has allowed the Chinese government to expand for surveillance, for control, very much fit with a trend that we were already seeing before the pandemic, in that Xi Jinping has already been trying for years to tighten the government's control over people and to expand its role in daily life. And so I think it has been convenient. I think that this was sort of a ready-made and for a long time popular excuse for the government to insert itself more forcefully into daily life.
So in that case, is it about health, or how much is it about health, and how much is it about power and control? When you look at the vaccination rates, especially for older people, is it clear why there was not greater encouragement for people to get the jab?
I think that, well, the Chinese government has always said this is just about health, this is just about health. But at the same time, if you look at the messaging and propaganda, you look at the messaging from Xi Jinping himself, they have made very clear that zero COVID is proof of China's ability and the Chinese government's ability to get things done and to be more efficient than other government systems, especially Western democracies. And so they have, if not explicitly, at least very clearly implicitly, made clear that COVID zero is also political because it's proof of the superiority of the Chinese government system. And so there have been a lot of questions about why the vaccination drive was not ramped up earlier, or why even it wasn't made mandatory when the Chinese government clearly has no issue with making other things mandatory. And, we don't know the answer to that question, but I think there certainly has been a line of speculation, which is, well, it is again sort of convenient for the Chinese government to have reasons not to open up.
Also, considering they're now widely available, why has the Chinese government not used some of the foreign developed vaccines?
The Chinese government has all along been trying to develop its own mRNA vaccine, and it has refused to approve any of the other ones, such as Pfizer, such as Moderna. And that seems fairly obviously political and nationalistic.
So it's about national pride.
Certainly seems like it.
So, to some extent, is part of the problem here, the bind that the government is now in, is not really having a way out health-wise from this zero COVID strategy?
That's right. I mean, it'll be interesting, even with this slight easing of restrictions that we've seen in the past few days, whether cases really start to climb even past what they already are and what starts to happen, because it still is true that there are a good number of vulnerable people in China who have not been vaccinated or boosted. It is true that China's hospital and health infrastructure is not as developed as the government would hope that it could be. And so there is a possibility that we could see some real health consequences.
Is it fair to say that this is likely to be the beginning of the end for zero COVID in China?
I think it would be silly of me to make any predictions because people have been predicting and predicting and predicting that China would open up over the past 3 years and it hasn't panned out yet. I think, the signals that we're seeing now certainly do seem to be the most definitively heading towards opening up that we've seen. But again, I mean, the government has a lot invested in sticking to this course, so it's really hard to predict.
So, how to weigh then the significance of the pushback against the authority? Where would you put it?
Symbolically, it's is tremendous. It has shown that even under the suppressive regime of Xi Jinping, people are still angry and people are willing to express it at great personal risk. In the short term, it's really hard to say whether it'll turn into anything, whether these protests will simply sputter out or be suppressed. But I think, regardless of what happens in terms of actual on the street protests that we see, I think it certainly is momentous for people to know that there are other people out there who are unhappy and willing to take these risks to express that unhappiness.
Yeah, and from the people that you've spoken to who've been at these protests, do you get that sense that they have the staying power, that they have the ability to stay in it for the longer term?
I think that's really dependent person to person as well. Spoken to people who participated in the protests who say they feel so fired up, so hopeful, and they're looking for ways to continue to participate. I've also spoken to people who said, this was my first protest. I was really optimistic going in, and then I saw the police manhandling people, and that was really scary. And now I have to think a little bit harder about what exactly this might entail. So, most Chinese young people have never had the opportunity to participate in a protest. And so the lessons that they draw from doing that are going to be very different.
Because do people anticipate, I guess, the use of things like facial recognition technology and a crackdown coming where people can be identified after the fact?
Absolutely. I mean, it's already happening. We've already heard protesters say that they've gotten calls and they're not sure how they were tracked. Maybe it was because of the cell phone signal from bringing their cell phone to the protest. So we've already seen that technology getting used to intimidate people.
Very timely as well, coming so soon, just weeks after the confirmation of President Xi, really as leader for life.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what makes this outpouring so remarkable because at that political meeting where he secured his third term, it really seemed like he was at the apex of his power, absolutely untouchable. No one could question him. And here we are seeing people questioning him. I mean, it's just no one would have guessed it.
So long term, what does that say about his leadership and also about the course that China may chart?
I think it must be a warning signal to him that there is this deep-rooted unhappiness among at least some sector of the population. And he essentially faces a decision now, which is to try and address that unhappiness and to make some concessions or to try to crack down even harder to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And I think what we've seen from Xi Jinping and from his political instincts seems to guide us toward the latter, but we'll really have to wait and see.
How much will it matter that these protests have been seen right around the world and are a major news story internationally now?
That's also hard to say. I mean, of course, there have been a lot of comparisons drawn between these protests and the 1989 pro-democracy demonstrations. And they are similar in some ways, but also different in others. But I think, after the crackdown in 1989, people asked the same question. They said, this was so public, the whole world saw this. China's going to be a pariah on the world stage. But China came back. And today, China is much more important in the global economy than it was back then. And so certainly a lot of eyes are trained on China. Certainly, I think the government would prefer not to have any sort of scene, but I don't know that that's any sort of guarantee.
Look, thank you very much for talking to us today, Vivian. It is an absolutely fascinating situation. Yeah, extraordinary. So thank you very much. Really appreciate your insight and your analysis there.